Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hello and welcome to the Dork Forest. It's me, Jackie Cation. DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com. If you enjoy a determiner, let's talk about the credits. The song written, composed, and sang by Mike Rickberg with his wife now. She wasn't when we first started 19 years ago, Sarah Cohen. That's right. Patrick Brady is doing all the tech. He does the audio and the video, and he puts it all together, and he's awesome. Vilmos is doing JackieCationStore.com, and thank you very much, Vilmos. The rest of it's on Squarespace, including DorkForest.com and TheDorkForest.com, which I just integrated into JackieCation.com. Also there, merch. There's Dork Forest t-shirts. There's all my stand-up merch, a new t-shirt and beanies, and also CDs and DVDs. If you own those devices, feel free to empty my garage. You knock yourselves out. You can see videos of different stand-up shows that I've done on the television, and you can watch a couple of my specials. Always fun. I have another podcast, The Jackie and Laurie Show, just about stand-up, but The Dork Forest is the flagship. 19th year, we're doing it. You can go to my Bandcamp. You can go to YouTube, where the videos of The Dork Forest are all hanging out, and there's a bunch of stand-up stuff as well. It is November or December of 2024, so I ask that you do not donate to the Dork Forest in these 2 months. Instead, you find a food bank in your town near to you and help out somebody in November and December. You can use feedingamerica.org, or you can Google the words food bank and your zip code, and a food bank will come up. I'm sure there's other things that I should be talking about. Come and see me do stand-up in November and December. Holy smokes, I'm everywhere. And JackieCation.com has all those tour dates. But who's going to dork out? Let's find out now. Rangers of the Dork Forest, it is I, Jackie Cation, in a hotel room outside of Toronto in a glorious small city called Hamilton, Ontario, and right on Lake Ontario. Catchy. You'll see a pattern. Today's guest on the Dork Forest is comedian Chris Grace, and it's at Chris Grace Comedy on Instagram and TikTok. And he has a new special coming out. I'm going to ask if there's an album as well, but it's called Chris Grace as Scarlett Johansson, and it's going to be on Dropout, which is the streaming service. And it'll be, you know, everything. At the very least, his Instagram and TikTok will be linked in the notes, and you can follow him and find out more about it. Though I do want, the Scarlett Johansson thing made me just go, oh yeah, he belongs on the Dork Forest. So Chris, here's my first question. Is there also an album?
No, that's a great idea. I would like to put this out in the world. I want to put out a vinyl. At a special thing.
Oh, there you go.
Records.
Yeah.
Old school.
Yeah, Matt. Come on.
Yep. Matt.
He'll do it. He's not a guinea. So so what you've chosen is a board game that I've never played. But it's you referenced that it was sort of like the board game version of one of the multi, you know, just sort of a headset video game situation, which kind of interested me. It's called Blood on the Clock Tower.
That's right. What's funny is that I think you and I had spoken maybe a year ago about doing the podcast. And
oh, sure.
At the time I was like, oh, I don't know, I could talk about Dota 2 or this other thing or whatever. And I also didn't like to pull the curtain back a little bit, I was connected to you through another person. And I didn't suggest talking about Blood on the Clock Tower. The other person said, boy, you talk about Blood on the Clock Tower so much. Why don't you talk about Blood on the Clock Tower on this podcast? Emergent from my behavior.
Yes.
It was not.
Yeah. Has the person who recommended, have they been on the Dork Forest?
No, I don't think so. It was just funny. I mean, I know I talk about it a lot. Like but this seems like the perfect place to do a deep dive.
It certainly is, since I don't know how many people does it play.
So you can play between 5 and 20 people.
What?
Probably.
Wait, so it's a party game.
It is like a party game. In fact, it is technically a board game because you got to buy it, and there's board game elements to it. But when you're actually playing the game, it's just you and your friends sitting in a circle of chairs, no table in the middle, and then one person running it, sort of like a quasi GM.
Game mastery?
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have like an – is it Clue-like? Wait a minute. I think I read a little bit. I tried to read – I don't do a lot of research for a Dork Forest episode. But is it sort of like Clue where you're trying to figure out who did it? Who did something?
Yeah, so it's similar to it's pretty much like Mafia or Werewolf.
Okay. Oh, okay.
But it's one of those things where Stephen Medway, who created it, tweaked Mafia and Werewolf with just enough tweaks that it is, to me, exponentially more fun than Mafia or Werewolf.
Interesting. Because I'm going to Google it because I just want to see some images. This is, of course, on YouTube as well. I'm not going to show you any of these images. You could Google it yourselves. So it doesn't look like it's okay. So it's one person is running it. Are they also the mobster? Are they the hidden Hitler?
No, the person running it. Running it is your nerdy friend who always reads all the rules in the game, and is the one who probably organized it and invited everybody over. And they're a person that probably has control issues and likes knowing secrets that other people don't know.
Okay, because they're the ones who have to say who's the doctor, who's the, because I've played Werewolf and I might have played Mafia. I think I liked my best iteration of it was Werewolf, where essentially one person's a werewolf. You all have to close your eyes at some point, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then there's hand raising and you're like, I'm the werewolf. And then you point to the person you're going to bite. And then the doctor points without knowing. Points to a person that they're going to cure, whether or not they have been bitten or not.
Yep.
And then there's, I think there was a, not Cashing Guns. Have you played Cashing Guns?
No, I haven't. I've heard of it.
Cashing Guns is a little bit like that, except for that it's all out in the open because everybody has a foam gun.
Oh, I heard. Yes. yeah. I've heard that's very fun.
You just point guns at each other. Yeah. You might like Cashing Guns just because of how much you like this one. Okay. So
I would say your summary of the action of the game is basically all you need to know. It's basically people closing their eyes, people pointing at each other, people doing stuff.
Okay.
I would say the big tweaks are that in Blood on the Clock Tower, every player has an ability. So there's no individual player that's just a villager. You know, that's just sort of there to either get killed or try to deduce who the evil team is.
That's a nice tweak.
Yeah. So every game you play, you are different. You know, you're randomly pulling a token from a bag and you've got this sheet of paper that lists all the abilities that are in that game. So everybody has some ability to affect the outcome of the game.
How many different characters are there? Like, are there double ups?
There are no
20 people.
So there's no, there's generally never two of the same kind. There's some exceptions, of course, but there's never two really of the same role. And then when you buy the game, you get three sets of what they call scripts. So it's like a set of like, I don't know, like 18 characters is one script, and you get three of those when you buy the game. And they're all different. So when you buy the game, I think you're getting like 45 or 50 characters. And then there's...
Wow, so the replayability's got to be great too.
Yeah, the replayability is insane in this game.
How many times have you played it? Have you played it a bunch?
Well, I played it for the first time in August of 2023, so I'm pretty young at this game. And then I played it. You can also play it online, which adds to the addiction.
Okay, yes.
And then I went to the Vegas Clock Tower Con.
That's quick.
Yep.
Because it was invented in 20, like it came out in 2022, didn't it?
It's been around for like 4 or 5 years, but there, no, it actually got pretty popular online during the pandemic.
Okay. Which is weird.
It is still a very young game. And so in America right now, there's a Vegas and a DC convention. So like it is pretty young still for having a full, you know, like 500 person convention for.
Yes.
Yeah. For one game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you have been to one of those conventions?
I have been to 3 of those conventions, and I will be at the DC Clock Tower Con in April as a special guest.
Oh,
sorry,
right, because
that's now called Final 3 Con. They've changed the name.
Final 3 Con. Why? Because is that in the game? Are there a final 3 people?
Yeah, there very typically is. You get down to 3 people. You know, one of them is the demon. You've got to kill the demon on the last day. And you've got 3 people all saying that they're good and they think one of the other 2 people is evil. So it's a very typical ending to the game is 3 live people and a very tense last day.
And so it has a clock to it? Like it has a timer attached to it?
No, just it has a that's part of what the GM does, which is called the storyteller in this game.
Right.
The storyteller basically moves the game through like day and night phases. And so it's sort of on the storyteller's own internal clock as to like how long those should last. That's sort of one of the hidden skills of the storyteller is managing how long the daytimes go, because the rule of thumb is that the longer the town gets to talk about the game, the more likely it is that the good team solves it. So you're trying to keep the storyteller in this game is not really neutral. They are putting their thumb on the scale to try to balance the game for whoever they think is losing.
Oh, I see. So as they go, they sort of adjust the scales.
Yeah, they have very very specific and limited abilities to nudge the game one or the way or the other. And so you get a couple
but
chances.
Power nonetheless.
Yeah, there's definitely power for the storyteller.
And have you been the storyteller as well?
Yeah, I probably have. Yeah, I at this point, I might have story told as many as I've played because I also stream it once a week on YouTube. You asked me how many I played. I actually have no idea how many I played. I've probably played at least 500 times.
Right. Well, if you've been playing since August of 23,
yeah,
and there's an online component to it, yeah.
At the Vegas Clock Tower Con, I played 23 games from Thursday to Sunday.
Wow. Okay. So I like the fact that there's a board game convention angle to it, sort of like Gen Con itself, you know? Mm-hmm. Have you been to Gen Con?
I have not been to Gen Con. Everybody tells me I should. Everybody tells me I should go to PAX Unplugged as well.
Which are just, they're just board game conventions. And one of the things I like about, and what it sounds like I would like about this con is that it's not like Comic-Con where you stand in line and you watch other people talk about stuff. It's, you literally just find, you just walk up to a table or you and 2 people, you know, you sit down and you are like, does anyone want to play this game? And so you end up doing that.
Yeah.
It's
the Clock Tower conventions. It's very social. Clock Tower conventions are basically like the Vegas one, which just happened. It's a series of rooms that are booked out in like the convention center part of a hotel. And each room has one game in it. And some of them are scheduled. So some of them are, hey, I mean, it's such a deep rabbit hole. Some of them are, I booked this room because I
Welcome to the Dork Forest.
Some of them are, I booked this room because I have a specific assemblage of characters that I want to run because I've got this idea of how they might interact. And do you want to come play this? And that there's a website and you sign, you schedule yourself for that game. And then there's pickup games as well.
And then, but you can you pick up? Can you pick your character in that scenario, or is it still random?
It's still from the bag. 99.99% of the games are still you pull them randomly from a bag.
Okay, and of the I don't know what is 18 times 3. So are half of those characters good guys and half of those characters bad guys?
No, it's like on each script there's like 13. Good townsfolk, there's 4 typically what are called outsiders, and those are all good. So that's like, oh, there's more actually. So there's like 17 good players and like between 5 and 8 evil
players. So just like real life, there's more good guys than bad guys, but sometimes the bad guys can win anyway.
Exactly. yeah, I forgot to say that this game is each person represents a different state. And you get allocated proportional
certain
votes.
Amount of electoral votes.
Yeah,
excellent. The Electoral College. But if most of the characters are good, you probably don't have memorized all 36, 40, 54 characters. But what are some of the characters that you can play that are the good guys?
Oh,
and what are their abilities? Do you know?
Yes, of course. I mean, I just say that because I've played it so many times. So when you start playing Blood on the Clock Tower, you almost always start playing the basic script, which is called Trouble Brewing. And Trouble Brewing has, I think, 12 maybe, what are called townsfolk. So some of these townsfolk would be something like the Washerwoman. So the Washerwoman, if you were the Washerwoman, I would wake you up on the first night. You know, everybody's got their eyes closed. I would wake you up and I would point at 2 players.
Yep.
And I would show you a token. So let's say there's another townsfolk called the Slayer. Let's say I woke up 2 friends, Lori and Maria, and I showed you the token of the Slayer. What you would then know is that either Lori or Maria is actually the Slayer. So you know something about them. So then on the first,
why wouldn't the Washerwoman know? She would have access to some gossip that others don't have.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
And that's that's her ability to some extent.
I mean, she's like, you know, you washed their clothes and you found like a crossbow in one of their.
Exactly. You know, right.
So then, during the day conversations, you could go to, here's another tweak of Blood on the Clock Tower is that during the day, there's a lot of private chats. So there's a lot of sitting in a circle and then people go and break off into little side conversations.
So you could
pull one of them aside and say, hey, I think you're the Slayer. And then they go either, nope, I'm not the Slayer. Or they go, oh, my gosh, I am the Slayer. And then you've made like a confirmation between you and that person that you're both good.
Because the only person who would know that they were the Slayer would be the Washerwoman?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, yes. And then there's some wrinkles to that as well. Because there is there's an evil role called the Spy. And the Spy gets to look at everyone's roles every night.
Oh, no.
So you could also be a spy pretending to be a Washerwoman.
Right. And is the Spy a bad guy?
Spy is a bad guy. Yep.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, makes sense, even though what if there was a good guy spy?
That's right.
Curious.
The only thing that could stop a spy is a spy with a, I don't know.
With a heart of gold. So, okay. So there's the Spy and the Washerwoman. What else is there?
So
other characters? Other
the
babes?
Washerwoman is what we would call a first knight or a top 4 character. Basically, what it means is that if you're the Washerwoman, I wake you up night one and I give you that info and that's it for the game. Like you don't get any more information. So you're never going to wake up again at night. But what's good about that is that you have less pressure. If you get killed as the Washerwoman, not a big deal. You got all your info.
Okay.
Okay. So there's another character called the Empath. The Empath, I wake you up night one and I show you a number with my hand, I either go 0, 1, or 2 on night one.
Okay.
And what that means is how many of your immediate living neighbors are evil.
Oh.
So.
Okay. The people literally sitting next to you.
Sitting next to you. The problem with that is that, like, people die in the game. So an empath also often wants your neighbors to die, because what happens is it's your living neighbors. So you'll get a read on the next person. If the person next to you dies, you'll get...
Right, it's one step over.
It keeps spreading around the circle. So the dangerous thing about this is that if the evil team finds out who you are, they will kill you at night, because that is valuable. You get that every single night of the game. So that is a character that is, you know, dangerous to the evil team.
Right. Because during the day, you are sort of giving that information to the other people that you know are good.
Yeah.
Is that true? Okay.
Yeah. Or you're harboring it all till the last day. You know, maybe you're collecting, making a case against somebody. And then the last day you're like, okay, here's what I got. Night one, I got 0. Both my neighbors were good. Then, you know, James died.
Now,
and then I got a 1, so that means that this person is evil, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, so that I'm always a big fan of everybody should have all of the information. That's a weird strategy to hold on to information.
Yeah.
Is that why would you do that? Why would you hold on to the information?
Well, because one, if you reveal too early that you're the empath, you become a target.
Fair enough.
Two, sometimes you can hold on to the information and the evil team presents a case. Like they end up, because the evil team is pretending to be good. The evil team and also anybody can be lying at any time. So who you think is the empath could just be an evil player pretending to be the empath. So sometimes they'll make up information that conflicts with yours, and then you can be like, wait, that's not possible because I got this information.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, that is the crux of this game, is that, you're almost always, initially at least, playing with strangers, right?
I'm playing with a lot of strangers because I play online and I play at conventions. I actually think for the most part, people are playing with friends.
With their friends and acquaintances. Yeah.
Yes. Friends plus that extra layer of, hey, I brought these two people because I think they'd have fun.
Right. Right. Larry's coming.
Yeah.
So you don't know Larry, but he could be.
Yeah.
He could be the best liar in the whole wide world.
Yeah.
So you said that one of the reasons that you like this game is that it's a substitution for small talk.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So what, we can get back to characters in a minute, but what on earth, small talk is just, I only have two questions when I meet people, which is where are you from and what are you reading?
Oh.
So, I don't, after that, I can only talk about myself. They have to come up with two other questions.
Right. I think that I kind of hate parties. Like I almost hate every single party I've ever been to.
They're hard because they're difficult.
So I hate parties. If we can play this game instead, I can literally stay at your house for 8 hours.
That's it. Oh my God, please. Does this game last 8 hours? Because I don't want a game that ever lasts 8 hours.
It can, no. A game should really be like 60 minutes to 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours.
Okay.
But if you play for 8 hours, you're playing 3 games probably.
Right. I also don't want to go bowling for 8 hours. So, and bowling is essentially, when I was a child, that was what board games were. Everybody would just go to the bowling alley, sit around, maybe have, definitely the people that I was growing up, they would have beers and they would bowl, but they would also chitter chat about work and they would chitter chat about their lives and what they're reading. And, but it is a good secondary board games are, and this kind of, does this kind of board game lend itself to sort of secondary conversations of, so what do you do for a living, or where are you from, or what's the scoop?
Yeah, it does. If you've got, yeah, I would say generally it does. I'm thinking also there's also the like hardcore players that are like, really want to solve the game and want to, like, I don't want to hear about, you know, who you
right,
are.
We're not talking about that right now. And yeah.
But you know, did you ever play EverQuest back in the day?
Yeah. I don't remember a lot about it, but I play so many games.
Yeah.
And Andy's a game designer.
Right.
And but there's, and then I'm also in a D&D game and several Hero Instant games, which is his tabletop role-playing game for cool. superheroes. And but so there's a lot of sort of small talk that happens in between turns.
Yeah. So what I there is small talk in this game in that sense, but what I loved about EverQuest, which I haven't ever got, like I never played Warcraft, like the deep, you know, like another, like a lot of other MMOs. But what I loved about it was, I can become friends with somebody if we are doing something together. It's hard for me to just sit across having coffee with somebody being like, okay, now we're becoming friends. Like, I'm just like, I don't know we're doing.
I have a podcast with Lori Kilmartin, and she doesn't even know that we've been doing it for 7 years, and thus we are friends. So, because we talk for an hour every week. Every week. I know more about her life and her kid.
Right.
And her hopes and dreams than anyone. So, but yeah, the massive multiplayer. Like, I didn't play EverQuest. I played World of Warcraft is what I did. And I never played it as a massive multiplayer. I think there was a board game called EverQuest that I played. And so I got... So did you play a lot of those? So headphone, most massive, the big, like, EverQuest?
No, I played EverQuest a lot when EverQuest first came out. And
right.
I the reason I didn't move on to World of Warcraft was EverQuest was so engrossing, but also kind of disabling for my regular life.
All of that stuff is consuming. It consumes any other social stuff you might do.
Yeah.
So this, at least you're out there. Like, if you're going to cons,
yeah,
you're having Thai food with people afterwards.
Indeed we are. Yes. And only Thai food. That's one of the rules of the game as well.
That is also.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So I forgot to mention this implements a strict electoral college, and you have to eat Thai food.
That's it. There's a couple of very strong. It's, I don't know why Thai food tends to come up at cons a fair amount, just because I think, what was the, do you know the hotel in Vegas that you guys played?
It was the Rio we were at.
It was the Rio. I did the Comedy Cellar at the Rio because there was a con that Andy wanted to go to because he wanted to play test his new board game.
Yeah.
And so I got booked at the Cellar, and then he could come and stay for free with me and save on, you know, not that the Rio is an expensive hotel. Mm-hmm. The Rio, come on over, help me paint it. Though they did, they've redone at least one tower since I was there the first time.
Yes.
But I forget the name of that con too. It was a really, it was all different board games. So it was
Dice West or something?
Yes.
Like?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
It was Dice. And there's a Chinese restaurant in the Rio that's actually a destination Chinese restaurant for the Chinese people in Las Vegas.
Oh.
So they have amazing dim sum.
Yes, I never made, yes. Okay, got it. I never went there.
So Saturday and Sunday mornings, you might want to take a friend or nine. And because I'm sure you know a lot of people now. Because if it plays five people, kind of minimum, which is what these games often do, right?
Yeah. It's just more often a 9 to 12 person is sort of like the sweet spot.
Yeah, because five itself is a little hard, right?
Five and six, you run a slightly tweaked set of rules that are sort of like... They're fun, but like it's not what people consider like the main game dynamic.
Okay, because the main game dynamic is, I mean, if you have 10 people, 9 or 11 people playing a game, it's not going to be over in 90 minutes unless the game master or the storyteller is pretty strict or pretty, you know, let's do
it
this.
It depends on what the setup is. But yeah, I mean, you could run a – I could run a 10-player game in 60 minutes if I need to.
Okay.
Like, it just – because I'm the one deciding –
And not that you would need to, you know. I mean, everybody's having a good
well,
time, right?
You know what? On my stream this week, I have my friends. We all met up. You know, it was a great week. We all had a great time this week. And so as a form of – I don't know, like obliterative therapy, I said, we're just going to run the basic script. And I was like, we're going to play 10 games in 90 minutes or whatever. And we did. We played five. But we played five games in 2 hours.
How many people?
I think it was like 9. And it was just a form of, I'm going to flood your brain with this game to push out whatever else you're thinking about today.
Oh, right. And it's a, what day do they, are they live streamed? Like, by the way, I'm talking with Chris Grace. It's at Chris Grace Comedy, new special coming out. Chris Grace as Scarlett Johansson on Dropout. When is that coming? When is that?
It came out in August.
It came out in August. So it's around. Yeah. So find that and go to at Chris Grace Comedy to find out more information. Instagram, TikTok. So what, do you have a streaming, like, can people watch the game?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So you can go to YouTube and search Noobs on the Goof Tower. That's my YouTube channel.
Okay.
And we stream once a week, depending. And what's annoying about my stream is that I don't have a regular schedule because I stream during the day in LA because I have friends in the UK that I want to include in terms of time zone. And so what happens inevitably is, you know, I schedule everybody for example, today at 2 p.m. I'm going to stream. And then what happens is I have to go do a Amstel Light callback at the Petco. And then I can't. And I have to move everybody to tomorrow instead. So basically what happens is people that follow my channel end up just like getting surprised that there's a stream all of a sudden.
Right.
So
there's all of a sudden practices. There's a new one.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, because it, if it's 2 p.m., then it's 10 p.m. in London or wherever. Yep. So there, you can't push it 2 hours because then it's, we're talking midnight, 1 a.m. Yep. morning, and they might have also things to do during their next day.
Yeah, pretty much. Cycle.
Yes. And okay. Have you, because I mean, the thing is like all the things that you wanted to, I mean, were mostly like, I'm gonna talk about this one first because you gave me sort of five things that you really like about the game, and and so have you? So you've been playing this game for let's say 4 years, or maybe 4 years, Sunrite, or 2 years?
No, I've only been playing for 14 months, basically.
Oh, right, that's right. And so, and you said that you've made good friends, making friends in adulthood. Which I think is one of the greatest things about Gen Con and about the dice things and about, you know, you just end up meeting like-minded individuals. Is that, how did you fall into it?
Well, so I have made a lot of new friends in the last year. I fell into it because I was at the Edinburgh Fringe last year doing a solo show, and through a series of connections, I got into a Werewolf Live charity game. And then the next night, my friend John Gracie was also running the next night Blood on the Clock Tower live. So similar thing, but you're playing it in front of an audience for comedy.
Chris Grace, you have a friend named John Gracie?
I do. Yeah. We do Grace a show called Gracie. Grace, we do an improv show called Grace and Gracie as well.
No reason not to. Thank you very much. Just wanted to make sure I had that right.
We're legally required to do that show once we met, essentially.
Yes, it's true. And the eat Thai food and somehow. Yeah.
So then I ended up playing Blood on the Clock Tower live on stage in front of an audience. And that was my first game I ever played, which was a pretty wild way to start playing this game.
Right.
Yeah.
But fun, I bet. But so, and so did you How did it escalate? What did you
You know, it's interesting because I've had a lot of experiences in my life where the initial that I almost sometimes bounce off something initially and then it just festers in my brain where then I become obsessed with it. So I played it. It was fun. Then I played it immediately. Like in the next week, I played it, I think, three more times. Because I was around a lot of people at Edinburgh Fringe that were playing this. And then I was in London the week after, and I had friends there that wanted to play as well.
Okay.
But after I played it the first couple times, I was like, oh, and this is a very common feeling people have. They're like, right. Oh, the storyteller has so much agency. The storyteller is just sort of not cheating, but like the storyteller is just doing power. Whatever they want. And okay. Like this game is not winnable because of the storyteller, which is actually not true, but it is a common perception people have early. And I was just kind of like, I was also playing with a lot of veterans and I was brand new. And a lot of times what happens there is that they're talking about things that you don't understand about the game.
Sure.
And I kind of bounced off of it. And then I just was like, there's a lot of content about this game on YouTube. And I started watching that and slowly got like, I don't know, clock tower pilled or something. I was just thinking about how, like, when I was living in New York, I saw the show Sleep No More. And I was like, I saw it and I was like, it's fine. Why? I feel like I got tricked into watching Modern Dance. and then Sleep No More wound its way into my brain where I just like started thinking about it. And then I've seen that show like five times now. There's something there about like, it really isn't always for me about like an instant obsession with something. Sometimes it's just like,
right.
I'm like, I don't know why I'm still thinking about that thing. And then I have to go revisit. Yeah. I don't know what that is.
So you played a bunch initially and then you watch YouTube.
Yeah.
And then how do you get back into it locally? How do you get back?
So then I was playing.
Do you have friends that play board games just in your life? And you're like, does anybody want to play this game?
No. But in that gap between that and Vegas Clock Tower Con, I was watching content and then I was dabbling with playing online. And then.
Okay.
And then it was probably Vegas Clock Tower Con that really like sealed the deal. Because then that I played 20 games in a weekend.
Right. And that is the trajectory. That is. And do you still play with John Gracie and any of those people from the UK?
I do. Okay. I played with John at this past Vegas Clock Tower Con. John was a special guest and we ran the Blood on the Clock Tower live game show at the convention.
Okay. That's awesome. And so I like the idea that you can end up playing something and there is an online way to get into it. And then there is a con where you can, because what I got from you was it is actually quite difficult to make friends. You know, when you're a small child, you go to school and you're like, well, she's my best friend. And you're like, you don't even know what that means. And then 40 years later, you're like, well, she's my best friend. I'm uncertain why, but we're still, because of kindergarten.
this is my, like genuinely one of my best friends from junior high. And he's someone who I do not talk about elections with because I grew up in Texas.
Right. Well, and my best friend, from high school, who I am still friends with, I do talk about politics with, his best friend is no longer my best friend. Mm-hmm. And he is an acquaintance. And but they were inseparable in junior high and high school. And but there are other things that I don't talk. I mean, I can't express to you how much I would love to have Stefan Zygmunt on the Dork Forest to talk about polka. But how much the thing about the Dork Forest is that you get an hour to tell me about your dorkdom and then I stop recording. It's not that I don't love what I love to hear what everybody's talking about, but Janine Garofalo, great episode about beading, mm-hmm. making little bracelets and stuff. But at about an hour, I had to go, well, you could keep talking about it, but I'm going to stop recording it.
Yeah.
And so it is like that with my friend Stefan, who I have known. But I mean, if we met today, we probably would not be really good friends. So it's really hard once you leave sort of structured things, right?
Yeah.
Such as school or university or sort of workplaces. And there's people in stand-up that are obviously my good friends and stuff like that. And then there's other people that are my work friends. And then there's other people that are my arch enemies. But the, right. But the thing is, to hear, I love the story is the point of this whole thing, is that you played it once, or in your case, four times or whatever. And then you watched, you went down a rabbit hole of YouTube's, and then you were like, I'm going to take myself to the Vegas con because it's close enough. And you played it online. And did you meet people online who were going to the con?
Yeah, I played with people.
Right.
This is a very common thing, which is really interesting. But you play online for 9 months with somebody, and then you're like, "Oh, you're a whole person."
Right.
Oh, your right. face is attached to a body. But
right,
it is,
I get to see your shoes one day.
Yeah.
And
and also the extremely surreal thing that has happened is that I have people on my stream that I play with pretty much every week. And then I was in Edinburgh 2 weeks ago teaching at this like improv festival, and my friend Mara was there. But I see Mara, I see her every week, but
right.
But we saw each other in person. And I was like, oh, it's not weird, 'cause I just played a game with you yesterday and
right,
I'll play
I know
a game
what's
with you.
Going.
Yeah. It's,
that's so cool. That is the point and purpose, in my opinion, of the internet. It is to make friends and to have connections with people. So now here's the two. I mean, and we're almost at 40 minutes, which of course is fascinating to me always. I just have to mark this 30. Okay, so there's something you said about. It's safe to role play bad guys.
Yes.
So because many people are evil. Somebody has to be the bad guy.
Yeah. Minimum two people have to be evil in every game, and sometimes up to four or five, depending on how big the circle is.
Right.
And I like my niece gets very anxious playing Blood on the Clock. I made my whole family play it.
I would get very anxious playing it just because I'm not. Yeah.
Yeah. So she gets anxious because she doesn't like lying to people about stuff.
Yes.
And I think people do come into the game sort of aligned with one or the other. Some people, like I definitely am more good aligned in that I sort of, my natural temperament is kind of what you said. Like, I wish everybody would just say their information.
Right.
Everybody would just be forthcoming about, you know, what they know,
right.
And then we'll all figure it out as a town together.
Right.
Yeah, right. So
that's not the game.
That almost never happens. And when it does happen, you have to remember that at least two of the people are completely lying about what their information is.
Okay.
So, but for people that are anxious about the deception part of it, I think it's fun to look at it as the way like a roller coaster lets you experience physical danger, but in a safe context. In this,
yes,
you can deeply betray your best friend in this game. And it is, I have found, much less personal and much less rage oriented than Mafia or Werewolf.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
So
who are the bad guys?
Like what kind of roles are they?
What are their characters? Yeah.
So there's one demon.
Okay.
There's always a demon. The demon is the one who generally is responsible for killing the people at night.
Okay.
If you're not the demon on the evil team, you are a minion, and a minion is somebody whose job is to help the demon stay alive to the end of the game.
Okay.
So there is a hierarchy in the evil team. I think that's different than Werewolf and Mafia as well.
Well, there's one in there's a sheriff and deputies in one version of this that is something else. But that is interesting. So there's one super bad guy, and does the demon have to be alive at the end of the game to win?
Almost.
Or can a minion become a demon?
Minion can become a demon depending on different abilities. So, so when you play the beginner script, Trouble Brewing, one of the demon in that script is called the Imp. And the Imp, every night, I wake you up, you point at somebody, they die. That's the ability. You have an additional ability, which is that if you are the Imp and you point at yourself, then you die and a living minion becomes the Imp. So basically, if everybody's like, okay, when we wake up tomorrow, we're definitely killing Jackie. Like, we got to execute.
Okay.
Like, Jackie is definitely the demon. Let's execute Jackie tomorrow. Then the previous night, you kill yourself and you go, well,
that is a an amazing twist. That is a great, cool twist.
Yeah. So then you wake up and you're like, I have to be, I died. How could I be evil?
You know? I wasn't. Yeah. So are people still sitting around the circle after they've been killed? They don't just go get chips?
Yeah, these are the great tweaks. So the big tweaks are, and this is, I mean, it generally is, I'll just say it's way better than Mafia or Werewolf. One, everybody has the ability. Two, you don't stop talking when you die. So
that's awesome.
So in this game, when you die, we do not reveal what your role was, and you keep talking. So you lose your ability. So if you were a good or an evil player that had a useful ability that keeps going, you lose the ability to do that, but you still win or lose with your team. So, and the main point of this is that if you are good, you can keep trying to figure out the puzzle of who the evil team is. And if you're evil, you get to keep bluffing and lying and adding noise to the conversation.
Yeah. And are you still have to close your eyes at night?
Yes, you do. You don't get to see. Yeah. And I think that's different from Mafia.
That's different from where. Yeah. That's totally different from that.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome because that just keeps everybody engaged till the end of the game.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you die. It's okay. That's
no,
cool.
In fact, I love dying early in Clock Tower.
Yeah,
because it's especially in some of the scripts, based on the assemblage of characters that are in that game that you're playing, there's a lot of times where if I die the first night, it's almost guaranteed that I'm good. Like, there's almost no reason why. And if everybody trusts me as good, then I can start building what I think the solution is.
Oh, right. Because the demon knows who their allies are.
Yeah, they know. The evil team knows each other.
Okay. So if you the first to die, you know that person is good.
Yes.
Unless that's a deep game. If you were, that'd be a really deep game to kill one of your minions right away.
It happens because there are certain minions that it doesn't matter if they die early. Okay. Also, the thing I described to you before about the imp passing to another minion, you can do that the first night if you want to. So, and people do it sometimes because rhythmically it's strange. It's like, wait, why would that happen so early?
Right. It feels like an interesting strategy. Like, how would that work? And, that's fascinating.
So what happens is with your group, so like you're saying, do you play with strangers or friends? You actually end up probably playing with a group, a shifting group of like 6 to 18 people that sort of come and go over the course of, like, say, 6 months, right? And then what happens is your group starts to, the meta starts to evolve. So the meta starts to be like, the first 3 times you do that move that we're talking about, it's like, oh my gosh, Jackie cannot be the demon. There's no way Jackie would kill herself night 2 so early in the game with no suspicion. And then by the 3rd month, you do it again, and they're like, Jackie always does this. Jackie passes it off.
She is the
early.
Builder.
Yeah.
Yes. It is. I don't know if you ever played Lords of Waterdeep, but there's the only nobody knows what your characters are, and there's one character that is the builder, and you only get points if you just keep building different structures. Mm-hmm. And so the joke with my friends is, whenever the first person buys a building, you're just like, oh, well, look who's the builder. But there's other reasons to buy the buildings. Yes.
Yeah.
But that's an excellent point, too, is that because you don't know these people initially, but by the third month, like if you played any, like when I think about apples to apples, the first time I played with what were then Andy's friends, and you, what I learned about playing apples to apples with his friends is what they found funny.
Right.
Like how dark they were, what they, you know, if they were into puns, as if they were into, they liked the idea of something satirical, like a real answer, or if it was like, if the word was joy and somebody picked back black lab and you're like, oh, puppies. And so right. Like, I mean, it's to play board games with people or to play any game. I don't want to be sweeping, but probably the layer that you learn, especially if you're doing it interactively, whether it's online where you get to talk or in person, where you get to talk, where you actually meet the people. Andy told me initially before I played any Dungeons and Dragons that one of the great things about D&D when he was a kid was that you got to role play all of the different things. Like you said, you got to find out what it would be like to be a bad guy. You got to find out what it would be like to be a hero. And he was like, you know, everybody I played D&D with in the late 70s, these were not heroes. We were a weedy bunch of little guys.
Right.
And so, but we could be heroes and we could be wizards and we could, you know, and it was actually pretty good social training of how to talk to real people.
Yeah.
Which is kind of amazing too, I think.
Yeah.
But, and also, I don't know if that game offers that, but yeah.
Absolutely. But also, like, that made me think of one of the other great things. I think it adds to the adult friendship part of this game, which is that I can come to you and say, oh my gosh, Jackie, I haven't seen you in a year. We were in that game together where you were the heretic and I was the mayor and I thought I had won, but your ability, like, you know what I mean? Like, like that happens all the time where at the conventions, there's a lot of names and faces and I don't really remember them all.
It's hard.
But,
yeah.
But people can say, oh, we were in that game at the end of Vegas where you became the good Baron on the last day. And then the poppy grower died, but there was a pixie poppy grower. So the evil team didn't, you know, and it's like nostalgia for specific dramatic moments that we've gone through together.
Yes. And those dramatic moments are fictional, but they feel as real as, I mean, the thing is it's as real as going to a party and somebody going, what we're going to do is we're going to do shots off of that guy's ass. And, or, you know, I mean, it's that, but it's more wholesome. It's more, has more chance. Yeah.
So it's like the narrative around it is fictional, but the agency of the choices that the people made was real. So, and their decisions to like trust fall or lie or whatever, those are like things they did that we can like remember.
Yes. And so the last thing that you were talking about, we have only about 10 minutes left, but was you were saying that you wrote a fascinating list of different kinds of characters or different kinds of people that could play in this game. Like
right.
Logical, like what, talk about that. Because that, first of all, that list is hilarious.
Okay, I can't remember what I said. Logical.
Okay. Logical, emotional, holistic, and detail oriented. So let's tell me what, like those, that's how, when you meet somebody, you're like, oh, you're kind of a holistic person. What the hell does that mean?
Well, but that, I mean, actually, and there's more veterans I know that are like this. I know a lot of really, really experienced players who actually just like sort of let the game wash over them. And they sort of let, they play the game at a much different level than me, but my impression of them is that they sort of just, they actually are people more prone to small talk on early days where they just go, hey, you know what? You don't have to tell me who you are. It doesn't really matter. How's it going? Like, and then by the fifth day of the game, they've somehow solved it because they've got a sense of the mechanics of the game and they combine that with sort of the vibes they got off of you just when you were talking to sort of feel like whether you were good or evil or not. And then they sort of, you know, create their, you know, mental image based on that.
That is amazing. Okay, because of course I have to tell. This is what I a big part of the Dork Forest where I interrupt with the story. Is when I first played D&D, I was playing with four other. Andy was the GM. He was Dungeon Master, and then the four of his best friends that we were playing with, they had all been playing since they were 13. Mm-hmm. And his buddy John didn't even play enough, so all he did was read the books and essentially consume them, and because he didn't have enough people to play with. And so, and plus the other thing is when I first started playing games with him, I said, you know, I actually don't like playing board games. And he said, that's because you're the youngest of six and you have only played sibling rules. And that means that if you pass go and you forget to ask for $200, no one will, they're all like, oh, you forgot. So sad, too bad. He's like, he's got 40 people to play board games with in Los Angeles, which is why he will never move. And he's like, we used to, you know, he was part of a science fiction club in college. And he said there was 100 of us and 60 of them you had to weed out because they were really hard to play games with. Mm-hmm. They weren't fun to play games with. They were a little too competitive. They were a little too too of something. They just got too upset if they lost, and they didn't understand that it was, you know, we're going to play again.
Right.
He's like, it's irritating to lose, but it can't possibly matter. So you can be irritated, but you can't, you know, there's no flipping the table up and being a crazy person. He's like, I don't want to play with those guys. So he had weeded out. So by the time I started playing games with him, they were with people who were competitive, wanted mm-hmm. to win, still do want to win, but aren't going, you know, this isn't life and death to them. We're going to play again. So, but I love the idea of that holistic thing. I have watched his friends play games like that,
mm-hmm.
where they're just all of a sudden, and then they come out of nowhere and win.
Yeah.
Because they... so much gaming. Yeah. Anyway, so what about logical, emotional, or detail oriented?
Well, I mean, I just mean that there are a lot of players who approach the game from a logical point of view, because there is early on, I remember thinking like, oh, this is just like Sudoku. It's, you know, Jackie told me this piece of information. If that's true, then Maria has to be the slayer. Which means if Maria is the slayer, it means that she can't be the demon, you know, X, Y, Z. And what happens is the game itself is designed in a way that you cannot really ever 100% solve it that way, because somebody might be lying. There's also the storyteller has some ability to give you misinformation. That's one of the tweaks from Mafia as well.
Wow.
So that's a pretty big one. There's a concept of being drunk in this game or poisoned.
Okay.
Which means if you're drunk or poisoned, then the storyteller can lie to you about your ability. So if you were poisoned on night one by the poisoner, who is an evil minion, in our world, you're the washerwoman.
Okay.
You get randomly night one, the poisoner has no info. They're just like, point at somebody. Okay. They just point at Jackie because they think it'd be fun to fuck with you. You wake up night one, you're the washerwoman. You're supposed to find out somebody's role on the good team. But you're poisoned. So your ability is now corrupted, essentially.
Suspect.
Yes. So now I point at, you know, Joe and Ted, one of whom is evil. One of whom, knows that he can bluff, let's say the investigator. So I show you Joe and Ted and I show you the investigator token. What you don't know is there's no investigator in the game. I didn't put the investigator token in the bag. So no one is the investigator, but there's an evil player bluffing as the investigator. So then you walk up to Ted and you say, hey, I think you might be the investigator. And Ted goes, yeah, I am. And here's my information based on that.
Right.
Now you are screwed because you've built up your world on false info.
Right. I wonder if anyone would like that. I would hate that. Okay,
it depends. Like it's a very, very fascinating thing that
yeah,
it basically makes the game it allows for the game to, that's what lets it be endlessly replayable and doesn't turn the game into like a solved problem every day. And what's interesting is that when you first start the game, you wildly overestimate how much drunkenness and poison there is in the game. Because there's only one poisoner in the basic script. They can only poison one person a night. And so what happens is it's a great actually example of how like the intrigue and suspicion of there even being a poisoner in the game when half the time the poisoner token wasn't even in the bag. But then everybody starts to go like, I don't know, I might be poisoned. I don't know. And the doubt just like, so it's so fun. What happens is you end up having to combine the information that you have with vibes. Like you have to, it's a hard game to play without, you still need vibes. You still have to read people socially.
Right. Is that the emotional player who's just
I mean, there's some people, so like, I'm not the best logician, let's say. I'm growing in my skill. I've noticed over the last like 3 months when I play, I'm better now about like, I just had a chat with Jackie. I don't know. Jackie's energy just seems different. Like Jackie plays so aggressively trying to solve the game when she's good. For some reason, this game, Jackie is like laying back and I don't really get why. And then it starts to be like, oh, I think you're evil actually.
Right. Yeah. That, of course, is how friendships are born.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. How about the detail oriented?
Detail oriented is so like, there are some roles in the game that are very, there's a lot of admin to them. So, example, there is the flower girl. The flower girl, every night I wake you up and I tell you if a demon voted on like the executions and nominations that happen.
Okay.
Which means if you're genuinely the flower girl, you probably, it's really hard to do live because not that many people like have a notebook and keep notes, but like you're trying to keep data for like 5 days of gameplay about who voted and who could be the demon based on those votes. And so,
right, I don't want to be the flower girl.
Exactly. God, there's some detail oriented players that love that. There's some people that will track it for you. You know, they're not the flower girl, but they'll be like, well, I kept track of who voted because we have a flower girl in the game. And then there's all for me, the hardest thing is being an evil player, bluffing flower girl and having to manufacture fake information for 5 days of the game that doesn't conflict with anybody else's genuine information.
I didn't know that we could do an hour on this game.
Oh, but it's funny because I knew I could do 6 hours on it.
Blood on the Clock Tower, you guys. And I'm with Chris Grace, and it's at Chris Grace Comedy on TikTok and Instagram. And it's a social deduction game. But Chris Grace has a new special out on Dropout, which is a streaming service. And it's called Chris Grace as Scarlett Johansson. And that is a hilarious name, but it's all going to be in the notes. Thank you so much for doing the show, Chris. This was fascinating and super fun. So thank you
so much. Yeah, it was a blast.
You're welcome. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
Fascinating. And I think I would have liked you to have actually been there. It's Chris Grace of Chris Grace Comedy, who really likes a tabletop game. That is not, it's not sort of a board game. It's sort of a mafia game, sort of a werewolf game. Is it sort of a Hitler game? It's called Blood on the Clock Tower.
Oh, okay. I've heard of this game, but I've never played it.
Well, it's a social deduction game is what he called it.
That's the werewolf mafia angle.
Okay. And it's been tweaked so that it has replayability. Everybody gets a character.
Okay.
And there's three different, and there's also scenarios, and there's three different groups of 18 people. So up to 18 people can play per.
Oh my gosh. So a total of 18 people. So it's 18 people divided into three or?
No, it's anywhere between 5 and 18 people can play.
Okay. But not he three times it's 18. Better.
Well, and there's three groups of 18.
Oh my gosh. All right. So you could actually play, what is that, 54?
Yeah, something where, but not at once. I think you just, but it makes the replayability.
Oh, I see. I got you now. Right.
And what was interesting to me was that he talked about the gameplay in the way that you told me initially what sort of D&D did for you, where it was a substitute for like small talk, and there was it was safe to role play different characters.
Yeah.
That you weren't, and the game,
but try on different hats, so to speak, personality wise. Yeah.
Right. And I there's a question I wish I had asked him, but I had not, which was this the first game? Was this like the first tabletop in person kind of game? Because he's been going to conventions now.
Oh, okay. Just to play this first game.
Yes. And he's been a guest at this thing, and he has like a YouTube channel where he plays like once a month or something. It's like, it's amazing.
Wow. All right.
And
that's cool. And that's very specific. Yeah.
Super specific, just this game.
Right.
Like, yeah, he had played other. He said that you mostly play good people, but mm-hmm. then there's like sort of, and I couldn't remember the game where there was one where there was a sheriff and deputies. Is that Cash and Guns? What is that?
No, that's Sheriff of Nottingham. No, wait, sheriff and deputies.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was
the
like
one
a
with
Western
the bullets
version.
Yeah, the Western one. What is it? I know which one you're talking about, and I can't think of the name. But it has the bullet-shaped dice, which are cool.
Right. Yeah. It was kind of fascinating. So
yeah. I know which one you're talking about.
And there, like the main bad guy's a demon, and then he has minions.
Wow.
And
all
then,
right.
But he can. And one of the great things about it, you know how like in Werewolf, if you're killed, you're out.
Right.
In this game, if you're killed, you still get to. You still are around like a ghost.
That's neat.
And you can talk.
You can talk. You just can't say, or maybe you don't because you don't know. Maybe.
Well, you could tell your team what you know.
Okay.
Or you can continue to lie.
Oh, right.
Right. So it's an amazing.
Always interesting.
Right. It's very much a liar's kind of game. So it's kind of fascinating to me.
Yeah,
but it was
bluffing
really, really
fun.
Interesting. Yeah. It was a really interesting episode.
Oh, that's super cool. That sounds great.
Yeah. And Chris Grace Comedy is where he's at. That's his Instagram and his TikTok. And he has a new special out on a streaming service called Dropout.
Okay.
And it's called Chris Grace as Scarlett Johansson. That's the name of his special, which I thought is awesome.
I hope he does at least one short impression of Scarlett Johansson.
The photo shoot looked like he was wearing a red wig, so it made me laugh. Anyway, it's a great episode. I'm glad people listened to it. So, and Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?